Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Is it tougher to get kids to read in summertime? Just maybe it is, but today we'll try to clear the way with a series of recommendations for good summertime reads for kids of all ages. We've got stories about princesses and ponies, unlucky kids who get fine, one about a booger. When's the last time you read a good booger story anyway? Well, our Johnson County librarians are Kate McNair, who will give us some recommendations for young adults. Kate, it's always nice to have you. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And the retired Debbie McLeod, who will survey books for kids really of all ages. Debbie, how are you?
Hi, Steve. Glad to be back.
And Dennis Ross is also back. He'll talk to us about books for kids of all ages as well. And Dennis, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, is it tougher to get kids to read in summertime, Debbie?
Well, there's so many things are going on. And
yeah.
I think it can be a problem. But then again, when it gets so hot out and you've been outside, you've been playing, and it's just perfect when we have this temperature to sit back and read a book and just going into those worlds that books create.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about some of these books and let's create some of these worlds here. Kate McNair, tell us about a book, An Ember in the Ashes. And I just should say, if kids want to call in today with their recommendations, if by chance you're home and you want to join our conversation, you can call us or tweet us. Call us 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. And please do call. Don't hang us out in the line here. We'd love to hear from some of the kids out there. Kate, tell us about An Ember in the Ashes.
Yeah, this is a great fantasy book for middle school and high schoolers. It's by Sabah Tahir. It's probably one of my new favorite books. It's the beginning of a series, and it's set in a world that's inspired by ancient Rome. Laia is a scholar. She's a member of a group of people who were once the greatest minds on earth and have since been conquered by the Martial Empire. She ekes out a living making jams with her grandmother, her grandfather, and her brother, provide health care to the needy in their community, until her brother is accused of spying for a rebel group that's fighting against the Martial Empire. And her grandparents are brutally murdered in front of her. Her brother is taken hostage, and Laia barely escapes. She makes it to the rebel group, and she asks them to help her free her brother, but they ask in return a price that could cost her life, and that is to spy on this military academy for the Martial Empire.
Well, I'm out of breath already.
I know.
This is like a lot of book in just a few sentences.
And it's
there.
Only half the story. The other half is about a guy named Elias who is at that military academy. He is just about to graduate. Everybody is really excited to graduate. Not everybody survives, so they're all very happy to have made it to graduation day, and they're eagerly anticipating being free of this school. But Elias wants a freedom that is more long-lasting and more truly free than what entering into the military is going to afford him. So he decides that he is going to escape on the night of graduation and run away until he is elected to become a candidate for the emperorship. And that means that he has to fight some of his friends to the death to determine who will be the next emperor.
How much can you pack in one book?
I know. It sounds really complicated, but this book moves so fast. I'm a plot reader. I love books that move quickly. Things happen, twists and turns. And this book has everything that you could want.
Well, you get a sense in this day and age, authors probably understand they've got to write books that mm-hmm. move pretty darn fast, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to keep people's attention. There are different types of readers. I have a lot of teens that I work with that are real character-based readers. They want to hear about characters, and there is a lot of great character development in this book, but I just love a book that packs some punch and where you know not everybody's going to make it to the last page.
Well, this book clearly packs a punch. The book is titled again, An Ember in the Ashes. The author is?
Sabah Tahir.
Sabah Tahir. Okay, well, thank you very much for that. Debbie, let's move on to a very different kind of book. a very different kind of book, Princess and the Pony.
Yes, it is. And this book either has just been published or it will be published shortly. Tells the story of Princess Pinecone. She's in a warrior family and her birthday's coming up, and all she wants is this fiery steed that she can ride into battle and just do wonderful things with. And her birthday comes and she's so excited, and she gets this pony with these big googly eyes that just looks so cute, it's sickening. And she's so disappointed because how can she be this great warrior and go into battle with this cute pony?
I've wondered that. I've had that question in front of me for years.
Well,
how do you do something like that?
Well, it's quite surprising because there's a little twist in here, because she does ride into battle with her cute pony and amazing things happen. It's sort of like the enemies, the opposing armies, they see this cute pony, and it's sort of like when you see kittens on the internet or puppies, and everyone goes, "Aw." So, you see, you don't have to be really strong or fierce to win a battle.
Well, Princess and the Pony is written by Kate Beaton, and this is for ages, 4 to 8, I have here.
Yeah, I would say that. But I think older kids would get a kick out of it, just because the illustrations are somewhat cartoony, and just the little twist in it. It's a really fun read, and it's great to look at the illustrations, to be perfectly honest.
Okay, we'll try to put a list of all these books up on our website today, kcur.org. Okay, Dennis, you got a pretty tough act to follow here. Two pretty strong books to open up our show. You want to talk about a book titled The Egypt Game.
Right, The Egypt Game. Yeah, it's I think you could call it a classic that I just recently finally got around to reading after years of knowing that I should have a long time ago.
We all have lists of books that we should be reading, don't we?
And it's just, I like it. It's just the right mix of fun and suspense. There's these two girls named Melanie and April. They live in a town in Southern California, and they meet when one of them is a new girl to the neighborhood, and they both discover that they both just love anything to do with ancient Egypt. They're just fascinated with ancient Egypt, and they also find a storage yard behind a wooden fence and down the road where they sneak in and start playing their own Egypt game. They have costumes and they have ceremonies and they make up secret codes, and this is what they love to do this. And then a couple of boys find out that they're in there, and so they join, and pretty soon two more do. So there's six kids who are meeting every chance they get in this backyard behind a shop, mm-hmm. and are making themselves their own world, their own ancient Egypt world. And it's just one of the notable things about it, I think, is the characters. It was written in 1967. And the kids on this street are a really ethnically diverse group of kids, and nothing is ever made of that. That's just matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And for a book written in 1967, I think that's kind of a standout characteristic.
The title, again, is The mm-hmm. Egypt Game. It's a classic, ages 8 to 12 for that one. And what is it about Egypt? Kids love all those sphinxes and stuff and mummies, and it's a natural, right?
It's the mystery part of it, I think, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're visiting with our good Johnson County librarians, offering up some recommendations for good books for kids to read this summer. And again, if you want to call in with a recommendation, 816-235-2888 is our number here. Kate, let's go to another one here. This one is titled The Alex Crow by Andrew Smith.
Yes, and I'm very excited to say that Andrew Smith is going to be visiting the library, our Leawood Pioneer location, on Saturday, July 11th. And I am really so glad that we can host him here, because this book is spectacular.
Huh.
It's set at Camp Mary Seymour for boys, and it's the home to Ariel and Max for the summer. It's a six-week camp without technology. They live in the Jupiter cabin. All the cabins are named after.
Just underline that phrase for a second. Without technology?
Without technology. That's the point of the camp.
Can you survive 6 weeks? Wow.
The boys in Jupiter cabin do okay. Everyone else at the camp is having a bit of a rough patch. The boys in Jupiter realize all the cabins are named after planets. They quickly realize that they're different from everybody else at camp. They're not really addicted to technology. The reason why they're there is their parents work for the Mary Seymour Company, which is a technology and pharmaceutical company. And employees' kids get to go to camp for free. So their parents send them off as like a vacation from their kids. So the boys of Jupiter quickly start to win the camp competition between all of the different houses. But when they sneak out of the Jupiter cabin at night to explore the counselor's break room, they discover drugs and booze and a book that reveals the true goal of the Camp Mary Seymour for boys. Now, this book is much like the houses at this camp, a constellation or a solar system of stories that are colliding together. So part of it is this experience at camp. Part of it is Ariel telling the story about how he came from a war-torn country in the Middle East to be adopted by a family in West Virginia and became Max's adopted brother. Another story is about the Alex Crow, which is a ship embarking on an exploratory voyage to the North Pole in the 1800s that becomes trapped in the ice and loses most of its crew. And lastly, Leonard Fountain, who is also called the Melting Man, a schizophrenic who's the product of biomedical research, who's currently driving cross-country with a bomb in the back of his U-Haul and the voice of Joseph Stalin in his ear. But because this book is written by Andrew Smith, who is one of the most talented authors mm-hmm. out there, it seems like you couldn't connect them, and yet they come together perfectly. Mm-hmm. And we have a selection of Read Aloud here that's about Mary Seymour, the company, and a little bit about the work that they do.
And Kyle Palmer, KCUR's morning newscaster, is going to take a read here. Kyle,
glad to do it.
Have at it.
One of the inventions my American father came up with, this was years before I arrived in America, was a device that helped him sleep better at night. The problem with Jake Burgess's sleep patterns had nothing to do with him. My mother, Natalie, snores terribly. I sleep downstairs from them, and even with my door closed, I can hear her nightly snores. I can imagine a similar sound being produced by a giant tree stump being dragged by a tractor down a rough asphalt road. When Max was only 2 years old, Jake Burgess went to work on what he called a snore wall. The device was rather small, about the size of a deck of playing cards, so it could stay on the mattress between Jake and Natalie. When activated, the snore wall emitted a pulse of electric-charged microwaves that rigidly locked the molecules in the air above it in a perfect line so they could not be agitated by sound waves. Natalie could snore like a sumo wrestler on her side of the snore wall, but Jake wouldn't hear a thing. Jake Burgess was very, very smart. Unfortunately, the first successful time Jake used his snore wall, two passenger jetliners crashed when they collided with the barrier in the skies over their house in Sunday. Jake never used the snore wall again, but the Mary Seymour Research Group paid Jake an awful lot of money for the device. That was the kind of research Jake Burgess was good at. Too bad for all those people in the plains, but progress, you know, marches onward and will eventually trample anyone sleeping in its path. Jake invented all kinds of crackpot things for the Mary Seymour Research Group. Max warned me about them. Sometimes I wasn't sure if Max was actually making the things up in his head just to scare me. That's where Alex, our crow, came from. It's another story entirely.
That's Kyle Palmer reading from The Alex Crow by Andrew Smith. And this notion of, and thank you very much, Kyle, that this notion of kids going to camp where you unplug, I wonder if that's sort of a growing phenomenon across the country right now.
I think it is, but I've also heard that there's even a little bit of backlash. So actually younger generations are using technology less, you know, as they sit at the dinner table and they see their parents checking their email or tweeting or doing something.
That's interesting.
Kids have decided that it's time to unplug, that they want to be able to have face-to-face relationships with their parents, their peers. And so there's actually a little bit of a pendulum swing the other direction.
That's interesting. I wonder if this camp would admit a 17-year-old I'm thinking about and a 20-year-old. I want you to contemplate that as we go through the show.
I think you should read
today.
The book first. Not everything about that camp is so hot.
Okay.
Yeah.
It all is cracked up to be.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Debbie, let's move on to a book, Lucky Strike by Bobby Pyron.
Yeah, this tells the story of Nate Harlow, who feels like he is the unluckiest boy in Paradise Beach, which is where he lives. Everything that he tries to do just results in failure or bad things happening. He just has no luck. So what has happened is that it's his 11th birthday, and he's just bound and determined his luck has got to change. He has this little friend, Jen, whose true name is Genesis. Her father is a preacher in town, and she is one who doesn't believe in luck. She believes in statistics and probability and everything, and she's like, you know, you're just crazy. It's not that you're unlucky. It's just that statistically things are kind of stacked against you right now, but that's about to change. So he's at this golf course, the miniature golf course, and he's just getting ready to, you know, have a perfect game, get a hole in one, and something happens. And the piece that we're going to hear is where he actually gets struck by lightning.
Mm, my goodness. Okay. This is for ages what?
It's for 8 to 12.
8 to 12 or so. That book, again, Lucky Strike by Bobby Pyron. I've been thinking about luck lately. I'm thinking about a certain car battery fender bender in my household, a bike tire that went flat, and then a certain sewer pipe that just sort of has ruptured in my neighborhood, which isn't the greatest thing in the world either. So that's not so good, speaking of luck. Okay, Dennis Ross, let's go on here to Princess in Black by Shannon Hale.
Right, and Shannon Hale has written a lot of fun books, a lot for teens and older elementary school kids. This is for your younger chapter book readers, and it's about Princess Magnolia, and who by all appearances is a perfectly normal, fluffy, proper princess. And she has a little horse that looks kind of like a rainbow unicorn. But she's not always a fluffy, normal princess, because when trouble strikes, she ditches her flouncy dresses and becomes the Princess in Black.
Mm.
And so What we're about to hear is a scene where she's enduring an unexpected and unwelcome visit from the stuffy Duchess Wigtower, and her glittering stone ring, which is her monster alarm, goes off. So she has to politely excuse herself and run.
KCUR staffer Sally Daly is going to read a little bit from Princess in Black. Sally?
Princesses do not run. Princesses do not stuff frilly pink dresses into broom closets. Princesses do not wear black. And princesses most definitely do not slide down secret chutes and high jump castle walls. But then, most princesses do not live near an entrance to Monsterland. Stopping monsters was no job for prim and perfect Princess Magnolia. But fortunately, Princess Magnolia did have a secret. She was secretly the Princess in Black, and stopping monsters was the perfect job for the Princess in Black.
My goodness. Sally Daly reading from Princess in Black there by Shannon Hale. Thank you, Sally. Kate, let's keep coming around the bend here. I Am Her Revenge by Meredith Moore. Tell us about it.
Oh, this one is a combination of Fatal Attraction and Great Expectations. It's a wonderful mystery thriller for teens that's full of plot twists and intrigue. It's about Vivian Foster. She was raised for one purpose and one purpose only, to destroy men, specifically Ben. Years ago, Ben's father broke up with Vivian's mother, leaving her brokenhearted and alone.
That's the source of all this.
Yes, and Vivian's mother swore to get revenge. And Vivian is the sword that she has forged to claim her pound of flesh. So Vivian is sent to Madigan, a boarding school on the moors of Ireland, where her mother and Ben's father fell in love. And her mission is to seduce Ben, get him to fall in love with her, and leave school before graduation, effectively cutting him off from his path to university and career success and money. And at Madigan, Vivian plays a game of cat and mouse with calculated efficiency. She entangles Ben in her web, and now that she holds this boy in the palm of her hand, she doesn't know that she can do what her mother is asking her to and destroy this boy. Is he really responsible for the sins of his father? And is she as heartless and cold as her mother?
And the questions just sort of hang there, don't they?
Here, yes, until the last page.
Yeah, okay.
Page-turner.
That book again, I Am Her Revenge, the author Meredith Moore. Debbie, you can't do a show about good books for kids without getting into boogers, can you?
No, you cannot. And
let's talk about a booger.
All right, we will talk about a booger. This is specifically Billy's Booger. And it tells a story of Billy, who is a boy who thinks outside the box a lot of times. He's an inventive boy. He's an imaginative boy. And he just has a hard time following the rules. So he's always getting into trouble. Just school isn't working for him. And all of a sudden, he finds out that the school is going to have this contest on writing a story. So he decides he is going to write a story about his booger. And Billy's booger is sort of a superhero and does all these fantastic things and is an amazing little story.
Of course it is.
Yes, and he's sure that, I mean, he looks like a little green man. There's a picture of him on the cover of the book. And
oh, green. Why green, Debbie? I mean, why would
well,
you pick that color?
I guess he just liked that color. I don't know. But, you know, he is so certain that he is going to win the contest. But as chances were, he did not win the contest. And he's crestfallen, heartbroken, whatever you want to say. But then he sees all the kids in class love his book. So
I was going to say, that's a popular topic.
Yes, it
is. For a certain age.
Yeah. It just goes to show that, you know, one man's treasure is another man's trash, or vice versa. One man's booger is another man's great find. Who knows? But it's a fun book. He says it's a memoir, sort of, and William Joyce, who is the writer-illustrator of this book, actually did make a book called Billy's Booger when he was in grade school, and a facsimile of that book is within the pages of this book. So it says that it's written by him and his younger self. And of course, William Joyce grew up, and he became this, you know, acclaimed illustrator. He's won an Academy Award. I mean, all sorts of wonderful things. So, you know, you might start small as a booger, but Here you go.
Well, Debbie McLeod, in your esteemed career as a librarian, have you ever come across another book about a booger?
No, I have not.
This is a first.
So it is unique. Who knows? Caldecott might be in its future.
Well, not fiction, at least. Now, there's some very interesting nonfiction books about.
Well, that's true. But I mean, it's
much more gross things than that.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
But not just one book on totally a booger. I mean, you've had other yucky things.
Right.
Yeah, nonfiction, but.
Well, that book, again, just for the record, is Billy's Booger, a Memoir, Sorta, by William Joyce. Thanks, Debbie. That was a great one. Ages 5 to 10?
Yeah, I think it's really for older kids. I mean, there might be some younger kids who have a little bit more maturity to them, but I think that kids that already are thinking about the, of course, younger kids are interested in boogers, too. But
do you have the book right there?
Yeah, I've got it right here.
Show me the cover here. Oh, it's... Well, you don't see any boogers in the cover.
Well, there he is.
Okay. Yeah.
He's right there.
I think
I just like saying that word. Okay, there he is.
Little green guy.
I've never said that word here on the air in all these years, so here we're talking
it's
about
it. It's a first.
It. Yeah, there you go. Right. Dennis Ross, Kintsugi's Kingdom.
Right. And this is another really, really fun, entertaining, adventurous book, I think. I read this, was recommended to me by a 10-year-old friend of mine named Blue, and so I took his word for it. And he was right, of course. It's about a boy named Michael who's sailing across the Pacific in a yacht with his parents, and he gets washed overboard, he and his dog. And he finds himself on the traditional deserted island.
Desert island.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not desert island, but yeah, it looks like he thinks he's the only one there, but it starts to dawn on him that somebody is helping him stay alive. Nobody that he's seen or heard yet, but he can tell gradually that somebody else is on this island, and he ends up meeting a very interesting man, and they both change each other and learn a lot from each other in the process. So, Michael Moore Pergo has written a number of really good historical fiction books for upper elementary, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say so.
And every one of them is definitely worth reading so far. All the ones I've read are. So, and it's has some beautiful illustrations in it. It's just kind of one of these things that will capture your heart by the time you finish reading it.
That sounds great. Ages what?
I don't know. Nine and up.
Nine and up.
I'd say maybe third grade to sixth, something like that, third to seventh.
Okay. That's Dennis Kintsugi's Kingdom. That's the title of the book, Dennis Kintsugi's Kingdom by Michael Moore Pergo. Okay. Time for a break here. When we come back, we'll continue our very good conversation with our Johnson County librarians about some great books to read this summer. We're looking for your recommendations as well at 816-235-2888 or just tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to UpToDate on KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our media critics discussion of current events, you can find that at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the show, we examine the battle currently underway between the Kansas judiciary and the legislative and executive branches. Plus, we'll hear from some newly elected Kansas City Council members. That's tomorrow on our show. This hour, we're talking with Johnson County librarians about some good books to read this summer. We're visiting with Kate McNair, Debbie McLeod, and Dennis Ross, all from the library. We have a good recommendation here from Joshua, who emailed us these recommendations. I highly recommend Steelheart and its sequel, Firefight, by Brandon Sanderson. Mm-hmm. They're set in a world where people started getting superpowers, but they all became villains, no superheroes. It follows a teenage boy as he joins a small resistance cell as they fight against a world ruled by super villains.
Yes.
It's ringing a bell.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And superheroes are getting really big.
Yeah, they are.
Right now. You see all the Marvel movies that are coming out in DC, but you're seeing
a lot.
Yeah. And they've just announced a new YA book based on the Black Widow, and Lois Lane has one coming out this summer.
Oh, really?
I think it comes out this month or next month. Yeah. So there's like the comics companies are hiring YA authors to write books about their characters.
They sort of ebb and flow, and every few years, here they come back again. They never leave us.
They never do.
Superman, Spider-Man, all those guys. Those books, again, Steelheart and its sequel, Firefight, the author, Brandon Sanderson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Lots of phone calls coming in. Let's grab a couple here.
Good.
Ron from Kansas City, Missouri. Ron, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question for you, and I might be showing my age. I'm in my 60s. When I was a young guy in grade school, I was really interested in the Horatio Hornblower's books, and I've been looking for those. I wonder if the librarians could tell me where I could find those, and also if they would even consider that as a recommendation these days for young guys.
Yeah, great question.
Well, it's more of an adult series, and I believe they're out of print, though a lot of the older books are being brought back into print. What I would recommend would be to go online, either at Amazon.com or like Half Price Books, or even Powell Books, Libris. There's all these out of print jobbers that might have that book for you. And also, you might be able to contact the publisher if you can find out who the publisher is and see if there's any plans for the book to be reissued.
And all of the libraries in the metro area have wonderful interlibrary loan programs.
Right.
So go into your local library, get a card if you don't already have one, and ask them if they can interlibrary loan something for you. I mean, we've borrowed books like from Ireland for people before.
That's true.
So if someone has it somewhere, we will try to find them and get it for you.
Yes.
It's so funny he asked about Horatio Hornblower. When I was a boy, the books that lit me up were the three investigators.
Yes, right.
Alfred Hitchcock presents mm-hmm. Jupiter and the other kids. They were sort of like the Hardy Boys, but in my mind, way, way better. Today, if you go into Half Price Books or anywhere, you can't find those books. You can find lots of Hardy Boys books, which I always thought were kind of a little on the bland side. But the three investigators books really, really were terrific, I thought.
Well, I think that the thing with the Hardy Boys is they're still cranking them out.
And is that right?
Yes, they are still, mm-hmm. I mean, they still have, I mean, you know, Franklin Dixon is just a pseudonym
for
stable
lots of
you're right.
Authors,
so they
yeah.
have kept that enterprise going. So there's always Hardy Boys and there's always Nancy Drew.
And actually, there are still books that are written by syndicates like
too. All the time.
The James mm-hmm. Patterson books, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thinking of like Alloy Entertainment
right.
and like Pretty Little Liars. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I can't think of all of them right now, but there are lots of books that are still syndicated. Just like Nancy Drew used to be. It's interesting.
Right.
Let's go to Maisie from Prairie Village. Maisie, good morning.
Uh-oh.
Are you there, Maisie? Well, Maisie, call back if you can. 816. You're a kid. I wanted a kid on this show. 816-235-2888 is our number here. Again, 816-235-2888. We're looking for good recommendations for summertime books here. And, Kate, we're up next here with The Lost Marble Notebook, A Forgotten Girl, and Random Boy.
Excellent job. That is a hard title to say.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
It has taken me some practice. This is by Marie Jaskuka.
Yes.
And it is probably a good book for high schoolers. It's written in verse, so it moves very quickly. You can finish it. Even though it's a 250-page book, you can finish it in an afternoon easily. It is about...
You could. I couldn't.
Yeah. It is about a forgotten girl who's dealing with her father's abandonment and her mother's resulting depression. She feels invisible and ignored until she realizes that someone has noticed her, and that someone is Random Boy. He hangs out with the stoners at the end of the street. He exudes that bad boy vibe. He's got dark eyes and a brooding demeanor, and he could have any girl he wanted, but the one that he has become fascinated with is Forgotten Girl. And the two collide in this bittersweet love story, and they reveal that they're both poets pouring their feelings onto the page, and when they share their deepest thoughts in verse and open their notebooks to each other, it sets feelings and events in motion that eventually lead to a tragic and inevitable ending.
What? Gosh.
Sold.
Well, case you are a health editor, Dan Margulies is going to read from this book. And Maisie has called back. Maisie, don't move. I'm going to come to you in just a moment here. First, we're going to hear Dan read from this book with this very long title.
I'm suffering a little cognitive dissonance here in that I was just a few minutes ago reading the Supreme Court's decision in King versus Burwell, and now this.
Now you
so
get to
let
read
me
teen
transition.
Poetry.
Yes.
Reading his words. Reading his words is, I guess, like reading his diary, seeing his room, stealing his heart, because I read every genre of writing, and his, how can I describe it? It's like he's cracked open the solid watermelon of his heart, and sweet, sticky truth is spilling everywhere. Fangirl. I asked him if I could have a copy of that one about me on the merry-go-round. He ripped the original from his notebook, and I glued it in here. I said, I want some others, too, to put in my marble notebook. I want our poems to tell the story of us. My notebook is your notebook, he said. Are you sure you don't want to keep them? He just pointed to his head and then to his heart.
That's Dan Margulies reading from The Lost Marble Notebook of Forgotten Girl and Random Boy. Dan, thank you very much. Kate, thanks for the good recommendation. That's high school kids, right?
Yes.
Okay. 816-235-2888 is our number here. Maisie, you call back from Prairie Village. Maisie, good morning.
Good morning. I was calling to recommend One for the Murphys by Linda Hunt.
Oh, that's a real good one.
What do you like about it, Maisie?
Well, it's a really heartfelt story, and it's kind of sad and more of a real-world story, and I felt like you could sort of relate to parts of it, even if you haven't really experienced all of the events in the book before.
Mm-hmm.
Give us the title of that book one more time, Maisie.
One for the Murphys.
One for the Murphys. What else are you reading this summer?
Well, I'm finishing up the Harry Potter series.
Good for you.
And I really like to read collections of comics, like the Baby Blues comics and the Zip
mm-hmm.
comics.
Good
yeah.
for you. Hey. Maisie, I'm sure glad you called. I hope you have a good summer, okay?
I will. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Maisie.
Bye-bye, Maisie. Kim from Peculiar, Missouri. Kim, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I would like to recommend the Dark Lord series. Dark Lord, the early years was the first one.
Right.
My kids range in age from 12 to 17. I think it's actually made for middle school books.
Mm-hmm.
But they read it, the first one, and they laughed the whole way through the book. As soon as one put it down, the next one grabbed it, and it was just the same thing. They absolutely loved them. They laughed all the way through, and just they thought they were fantastic.
And those books, again, are the what books, Kim?
The Dark Lord series.
Okay.
It's by Jamie Thompson, I believe.
All right.
It's about a boy who is, I believe, 13 years old. He's on Earth. He thinks that he is a Dark Lord sent from another dimension, and he's here on Earth to be punished and sent back as a teenager. And just the mishaps he goes through trying to get his powers back and trying to get back to where he belongs.
That sounds like a classic Kate McNair book.
Oh, it is fantastic.
Yeah.
And not only, he doesn't think that
he really is a
Dark Lord. Yeah. He is the Dark Lord who is thrown into the pit of despair and ends up on Earth in a 13-year-old's body. And the first thing that happens to him is he gets hit by a car. It's great.
Kim, thank you for calling. I appreciate
it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Right. Wesley from Lee Summit. Wesley, you're on Up to Date.
Hey, thanks. I just wanted to recommend a few books when I was growing up, The Hardy Boys, and mm-hmm. also Nancy Drew.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Anne Frank wrote other books besides her diary. She wrote the little short stories. And also, Anne Frank remembered it was written by Meet East.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a few options. The one by Meet East, that's probably 14 to 18 year olds.
All right. Okay. Wesley, thank you for calling. I appreciate
it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. We have a recommendation here from Cheryl, who called to recommend Everything Breaks by Vicki Grove. It's about a teenage mourning over her lost friend. Over a lost friend hits upon drinking and driving. It's a young adult book by a Missouri author. Does that ring a bell? Everything Breaks by Vicki Grove.
Well, her name, the author's name does,
okay.
but I
yeah,
don't know
yeah,
that
the
book.
Name, yeah.
Okay. Debbie, let's scoot down here to a book, Smick, by Corrine Cronin.
Right. This is something totally different. Everything that we've talked about is for a little bit older child. Even the picture books were, for preschoolers or four-year-olds and up. This one can be used by even two-year-olds. Very limited vocabulary. Tells the story of a big white dog and his stick who becomes friends with a chick. So it's great. It's great for children that are just starting to use books that are actually paper rather than board. And it's also an excellent beginner reader because of the limited vocabulary.
Smick, S-M-I-C-K.
Right.
How can you avoid a book like that? Okay. Dennis Ross, what do you have here? You have a book, Rabbit Hill by Robert Lawson.
Right. And this is not just a classic. This book is even older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
It's been around for a really long time. And it's for all those people who love small furry creatures as the characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good one for young chapter book readers, but also for people who want to start, when they first want to start reading a chapter a night to their kids out of, instead of just picture books, and they want that first book and we recommend things like Charlotte's Web. This is in that same
mm-hmm.
category.
It's a classic.
There's some new folks coming to live in the big house. And all the animals of Rabbit Hill are all abuzz. They're just wondering what these folks are going to be like. Are they going to be, will they plant a garden? Will it be a good garden? Will they be the kind of people who set traps, or will they be the people who are kind to animals? So they're all really excited, and everybody's speculating about who's moving in and what they're going to be like. And we'll hear a couple of them discussing that.
Here's what we're going to do. Your host has made an egregious mistake here. I skipped over a little reading from SMIC, from Linda Scherer, KCUR's morning drive announcer, afternoon announcer, is going to read a little bit from SMIC. Linda, take it.
Okay, here we go. SMIC. Sit, SMIC. Good SMIC. Stick. Go, SMIC, go. Good SMIC. Cluck. Chick. No, SMIC, no. SMIC. Chick. Chick. SMIC. Oh, SMIC. Oh, good SMIC. Stick. Slow, SMIC, slow. Sidekick. Side chick. Side lick. Ick.
Well, I think Linda Scherer was the right person to read from SMIC. Linda, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You are welcome.
We're going to jump ahead to Dennis Ross's book here. This is the Rabbit Hill book by Robert Lawson that he just talked about. New folks are coming to live in the big house. We're going to talk about Kathleen Conahan Gross is going to read from Rabbit Hill.
Fewey the skunk stood up by the edge of the pine wood looking down at the big house. There was a slight rustle, and the red buck appeared beside him. Good evening, sir, and good luck to you, said Fewey. New folks coming. So I understand, said the deer. So I understand, in high time, too. Not that it matters to me especially. I roam a lot, but things have been poorly here on the hill for some of the little fellows, very poorly. Yes, you roam, Fewey answered, but you're not above a mess of garden sass now and then, are you? Well, no, not if it's right to hand, the buck admitted. He sniffed slightly. I say, Fewey, would you mind moving over a bit, would you, a little to the leeward? There, that's fine. Thanks a lot. As I was saying, I'm fairly fond of a mess of greens now and then. A row of lettuce, say, or some young cabbage. Very young, the old ones give me indigestion. But, of course, what I really crave is tomatoes. Our tomatoes. You take a nice, young, ripe tomato now. You take it, interrupted Fewey. Personally, myself, I don't care whether they're planting folks or not, except for the rest of you, of course. Gardens are nothing in my life. What I'm looking forward to is their garbage. You do have such low taste, Fewey, said the buck. By the way, the breeze seems to have shifted. Would you mind? There, that's fine, thanks. As I was saying, low taste nothing, answered Fewey indignantly. You just don't understand garbage. Now there's garbage and garbage, just like there's folks and folks. Some folks' garbage just ain't fit for, well, it ain't even fitting for garbage. But there's other garbage now. You couldn't ask for anything nicer. I could, said the deer firmly, much nicer. By the way, just to change the subject, Foxy's rather counting on there being chickens, perhaps ducks even. That ought to interest you. Chickens is all right, young ones, admitted Fewey, and ducks is all right. But to get back to garbage, oh dear, the buck groaned. The wind's changed again, and he backed into the woods.
You had that little slang thing going on there, Kathleen. Very advanced reading here. I appreciate that. It's Kathleen Conahan Gross, KCUR's membership coordinator. Thank you, Kathleen. I appreciate that.
Thanks.
816-235-2888 is our number here. We're looking for your recommendations for good books. We're visiting with our Johnson County librarians, Kate McNair, Debbie McLeod, and Dennis Ross. We have one good recommendation here. I'm just scrolling back up here. These Broken Stars by Amy Kaufman.
Yes.
It was very good. Romantic and exciting for ages 14
yeah,
and up.
Yeah, that
Kate.
Was good.
That one's like Titanic in space, if I'm thinking of the right book. It is two unlikely people thrown together in the midst of space in a horrible crash. on a desolate planet.
Well worth the read.
It is. And the audiobook is also really fantastic. I enjoyed that.
Okay. Okay. How do you keep up with all this stuff? You guys have all these books. How do you do this?
It's our job.
Yeah. So that's what we do.
Are you reading like, you're like working during the day and you're reading books at night? Is that what we do
yeah,
here?
Yeah, isn't that what you do?
Pretty much.
Well, I guess that's right. I never think about
if
it.
If I'm not listening to KCR in my car, I've got an audiobook in there. So right,
really?
Same with me.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I'm not really retired. I mean, I'm just semi-retired.
In what sense?
Oh, well, you know, I teach at JUCO.
That's
but
right.
Teach children's literature, so I have to keep up with
all
the children's
everything.
Stuff. And, hey, children's books are the best.
Yeah, there you go. Kate, let's go to Red Queen by Victoria Aveyard.
Yes, and that's Aveyard. The exact way to pronounce it. This is a new dystopian series for teens. It's set in a society that's split between two different types of people, those with red blood who do the backbreaking work, serve in the army, and those with silver blood who are the elite ruling class who are also gifted with special powers like controlling fire, reading minds, seeing into the future. And Mary is our main character. She was born as a red-blooded girl. She is afraid of getting conscripted into the army for a year that's been going on for, or a war that's been going on for about 100 years, which is basically a death sentence. Nobody survives very long in the army when she gets offered a job to work in the castle. And this is a job that would pay well. She'd be able to support her family. She would avoid getting conscripted in the army. So it seems too good to be true. And it is. On the first night of serving in her new job, she is serving at this event called Queen's Trial, where all of the richest families, all the richest silvers, parade their daughters and their deadly abilities in front of the king and queen, in the hopes that one of them will be chosen to be betrothed to the prince. But things go wrong when Mary accidentally falls into the arena where these girls are showing off their powers and into an electrified net. And it should have killed her, but somehow she absorbs the electricity and she can feel the sparks tickling across her skin. Her survival is quickly covered up by the royal family. They don't want any red to know that a red has these special abilities. Only silvers should have these abilities. So they make up a story and they represent Mary to the public as the daughter of a lost silver general. And she has been raised by reds, but she's back now with the people that she is a part of, the silvers, and she has been betrothed to the youngest prince. Yeah. And at the same time, she has been approached by a rebel group that have invited her to become their spokesperson and lead the mission. And so she has to decide between her family's safety and pretending to be a silver and living this lie, or joining the rebellion.
That's a Red Queen by Victoria Aveyard.
Yes.
Okay, sounds good. Debbie, can we scoot ahead down to the last one here on our list? I'm going to get David Folk in here, who's going to read a little bit from Island of Dr. Libris by Chris Grabenstein. Tell us about it.
Well, the book is great. It tells a story of a young boy, and he his parents are contemplating a divorce, and the mom and the son go to this cabin, which is owned by Dr. Libris. And what happens is that he finds out that these weird characters he sees in this island on the lake, and the lake is owned by Dr. Libris. And what he is doing is he's conducting an experiment to see if by reading a certain book, the characters come alive on this island.
Do we have the wrong book, David? What's we have Lucky Strike.
Lucky Strike.
Yeah, that's Lucky Strike. That's the one that...
That's the one you're describing here, right?
No.
Or not?
No, okay. I described that one earlier on.
Oh, okay.
We're so just out of place.
We're
a little
out of
bit.
Place. So,
it's a crazy day.
Okay, we're going to do Lucky Strike here, okay? This is David Folk, a director of philanthropic giving here at KCUR.
As he placed his golf ball on the tee and eyed the long ribbon of green between himself and the T-Rex, something approximating a roar gurgled from the dinosaur's mouth. Its jaws creaked open and closed, its small arms jerked up and down. Nate shuddered. He took a deep breath and gripped his golf club. "This is my last chance," he muttered to himself. "My last chance to get a hole-in-one and show everybody I'm not a loser." It would take a miracle of the highest order, he knew, to get a hole-in-one. Still, wasn't Reverend Beam talking all the time about miracles? The face of Jesus in a tortilla, Lazarus rising from the dead, Jonah inside that whale? He felt an unaccountable wind push at his back, urging him on.
"Oh, please don't eat me, Mr. Dinosaur,"
Ricky called from the sidelines in a high, girly voice. Nate took a deep breath. He looked up at the clear blue Florida sky and said to whoever was watching over luckless boys, "Please, just this once, please." He squeezed his eyes shut. He swung his golf club high above his shoulder, the head of the club winking in the sun. You can do it, Jen said. The odds are in your... Nate never heard what Jen said next. At exactly the same time, the brightest flash of light and a crack as loud as the voice of God shook Nate's world. And then it was as if the hand of God grabbed Nate, none too gently, by the hand, twirled him up and around, and flung him at the feet of the king of dinosaurs. The last things he remembered seeing were the creaking jaws of the T-Rex as they closed down upon him. The last thing he remembered thinking was that birthday wishes never, ever come true.
That's KCUR's David Falk reading from Lucky Strike, right? And I want to thank our Johnson County librarians, Kate McNair, Debbie McLeod, Dennis Ross. Thank you all very much for good recommendations.
Oh, it's
we'll post them all later on today. Thanks,
Great.
Guys.